Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. As always, I'm Shane Stetsny, he is Brent Smith. Brent, you know, I was searching for, you know, what's really the headline coming out of Crandon, and, you know, I think we should really talk about the 570s en route, just kidding. Forest County Pottawatomie Community Cup.
You had me going. You really did.
I know you're following along on the notes, and you're like, that's not what it says. All right. I mean, get it out of the way. It has to be the craziest finish of all time in short course off-road racing. You and I have combined 60-plus years watching this sport. We've never seen anything like it. Walk us through that last three corners between Keegan, CJ, Kyle Chaney. What was your point of view of the whole thing?
It was unbelievable. Our point of view, well, granted, we were clocking off the time back and forth, wondering when they were going to meet. And it just so happened to be three corners before the final one. And they started going at it. And it was crazy. Keegan had a sizable lead. And then CJ, with about, like I said, three corners ago, made it a drag race down past the sweets jump into the gravel pit. And from our eyes, we just seen Keegan go to the top like they should in the Pro 2. And CJ threw it in there, backed it in Kyle LeDuc style, and got caught on Keegan Kincaid. And then you and I were both wondering what was going to go on. They were tangled, and you were yelling, you know, are they going to split apart? And
we were also both caught where, you know, when we're calling off the screen, we're locked in on what we're seeing. So as the laps were winding down, okay, the story as we thought it was going to be was CJ has just enough time to catch Keegan. It's going to be those two. And we, I don't even think, had thought about any other driver for like two laps.
No, because that lead was unbelievably huge for King Kincaid and CJ. But hey, it just so happened to happen in the way it did. And when Chaney came in, he kind of rolled through the bottom of the gravel pit, and I'm like, okay, what's he gonna do? Then it was a full-on drag race after he made contact with CJ. And I went back and watched that race now that I'm watching it multiple times. Like, I think CJ might have lost front wheel drive.
He said on the podium that he lost he tore up the transmission trying to get unhooked from Keegan.
Okay, yeah, so that makes sense. But anyways, it was just crazy going into the Calamity corner. Keegan just running the fine line. I never thought by calling, I was saying Keegan Kincaid, the final third. And it was amazing because you come right over the top and talk about Chaney getting in the mix, because I didn't think he was close enough. And that Pro 4 drove across the bottom, and man, just monster truck styled it. I can't believe
drove across
that
more than the
way.
Bottom.
Yeah, but that's great Champ off-road racing. And that's what the fans came to see. And unbelievable just the views, what we got out of that, the let alone the last minute contact. I mean, the race all in all was great with the time gap. I mean, whoever made that happen, I heard Faye did the time gap, and it come down to the last couple turns, and man, I don't know how you're gonna top that. We got to go to ERX and try to just level with that big part in our lives with the off-road racing. And it's just amazing to see those Pro 2s and Pro 4s go at it. That's how it should be.
Yeah, I was kind of scratching my head. I was trying to think, let alone a finish of a race, but if there's been a moment in short course off-road racing that's gone viral like that one did. And I really couldn't think of one. You know, 15 or so years ago, there was a driver who like was mad at another driver, parked on top of the guy basically and hammered the throttle, and everybody was talking about that. It was a really bad situation, but it didn't like blow up across the internet. Of course, different era, so social media wasn't quite what it is now. But for this, that moment to blow up like it did, I mean, it's Thursday. It's, you know, July 3rd today. Just today, John Boy Media, who's huge in the baseball world, famous for doing breakdowns and lip reading of like fights and umpire ejections and stuff in pro baseball, found our clip and posted a video of a breakdown of that finish to the race. I mean, a guy that doesn't cover motorsports at all and is huge on the internet found it. Barstool Sports tweeted out the video during game 7 of the NBA finals.
That is nuts, dude.
Like, the posts above and below it were, you know, NBA players. Tyrese Halliburton for the Pacers got hurt, so it was a post about like his Achilles that he tore in Game 7. Then there's Champ Off Road, and then the next thing is more Game 7 NBA Finals stuff. Awful Announcing picked it up. That's a blog that covers, they cover sports media. It's a little bit meta, but they talk about NFL broadcast teams and a whole bunch of stuff. They were on it. The Twitter account Dudes Posting Their W's posted it out to their however many followers. I think we're somewhere around like 10 million views on that across all the different versions of the video that got thrown out on different social media platforms. Have you ever seen anything like that come out of our sport before?
I really haven't at all. And I've been just trying to scatterbrain myself and try to think of a big moment. I mean, we love our sport. We pick out the big days and the bad days, but I think this one tops them all. It's going to be one of those moments where you're going to have every duck in a row to make it beat this moment, because it was just the right point, the right time. And it was at Crannon, the big house. And that was the spring run, Shane. We're not even at the fall run.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what we're going to see? More trucks, more competitiveness. And hey, CJ Greaves, anytime that he's breathing down your back, you better be on your game. And Keegan did everything he possibly could, and it seemed like he was a pinball the last 600 yards of that race.
Fortunately, the aftermath of that, as far as I've heard, is that Keegan had like a broken fan shroud, and that's it, and some scratches and bent fiberglass. So they all came out of that more or less unscathed. And I think the kicker of the whole moment anyways was Keegan and Kyle Chaney jumping out of their trucks, which were stuck on one another, climbing on top of the heap of metal and then hugging it out. Like, what a way to end that whole moment.
Yeah, and normally we see fisticuffs going at it, like punching each other in here.
We wondered what would happen.
Yeah, and they're hugging. Hey, granted, that could happen any different way. It's no different than somebody going, I would have had him one more lap. I mean, it laid out the way it did and the way it was supposed to, and no better for Keegan Kincaid to get it done. Not only one big cup win, but to sweep the weekend in Pro 2. Like,
yeah.
He's a man on a mission right now, and anytime you got the fire underneath the truck and the team of Kincaids, that's scary, because they can keep going with that momentum.
Yeah, it seems like everything's fallen into place for Keegan, and you know, we'll dive into Pro 2 more on the next episode before we get to ERX, but yeah, you're right. It looked like Ryan Beat was going to just burn down the whole season, but tides have changed a little bit there, and like you said, Keegan, sometimes the best thing for you is just to go back home. He goes to his home track and wins, you know, 2 points races plus.
And there he was whooping up, dude. He was whooping up, yeah, on the field. That wasn't just a, okay, let's go do some test laps. Like, we were watching him in the first half of that Pro 2 race, and I believe it was Saturday. He was checked out. I mean, he was going through turn one, and they were not even in the Cowboy yet.
It doesn't get much better than that. And before we lose sight of the Cup race finish, Impulse Media had all three of the drivers involved, Kyle, Keegan, and CJ, on their podcast at the same time. So I suggest you go check that out too. Hear it from the drivers, but you know, not to pat ourselves on the back, but it was so cool that we got to have that moment, you know, and be part of that moment too.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of the whole weekend, right? I mean, we had great racing. I mean, have a race end that way and get to call it. I mean, that was pure emotion. That was let our hair down. Whatever came out of our mouths was coming out of our mouths with that energy, because that's what we felt. That was no different, like we said multiple times. If we were sitting at home or sitting by the fence, we'd have been hitting each other and getting excited the same way. And
I was going to say we were hitting each other.
Yeah, but I mean, we'd have been doing the same no matter where we were at. But it was so much fun. The best race yet in my announcing career of only 11 short years, but hands down, we've had close moments, but let's keep going after it. We need more of these tracks to have the Pro 2 Cup, Pro 4 Cup showdown, especially Bark River. I know they have the layout and everything where we could separate it, and I think it would be fun to watch, and it's just entertaining.
I'm all for it.
It's entertaining. It's what we live for.
I think maybe one of the best ways I can sum up that moment and what it's going to mean down the road is, you know, I live in the Green Bay area right now, and I read in an article about the Green Bay Packers and about the Ice Bowl, the 1967 NFL championship, where it was super cold. They were playing against Dallas. The writer of the article said, if you ask around, you'll find several hundred thousand people who say they were there, even though Lambeau at the time held, you know, 50 some thousand people. I think this is going to be that moment. Like 10, 15 years down the line, people are going to say, oh yeah, I was there for that. I saw that crazy finish. You know, it's going to cross over into not just the viral moment that it has been, but a tall tale, something that we're going to talk about years from now.
Yeah, it's no different than any big moment in any kind of sport. But for us, it's very special, Shane, right? It's our sport. It's our moment. And it blew up to the dickens. It was amazing to see those numbers. And I had to call you and text you a couple different times, even on the ride home. And it's like, why? Why this moment? Why was it like that? But to sit back and realize it was because nobody's really seen that yet in our lives, how it laid out. Like, to have that much confusion and to have a truck jump over another truck. And I mean, we didn't even talk about a black flag, right? I mean, in NASCAR, somewhere, IndyCar, we probably would have seen fines up to thousands of dollars. And we have two grown men hugging it out, having a great time and saying, what a race. And it's like, man, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, a moment that'll, like I said, a moment that'll go down in history. I guess that's probably the best way to sum that up. Speaking of history, the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame has just announced their 2025 class of inductees, and short course off-road racing has another person headed to the Hall of Fame. The Flying Dutchman, Dan Vandenhoevel, is a Hall of Famer. What are your reactions to that?
Man, absolutely, hands down, well-earned, deserved. You could say just about anything about Dan Vandenhoevel and the Flying Dutchman. He was one of my heroes growing up. I remember as a small kid riding my pedal bike down the F Road in Bark River, and here comes this big purple trailer and stopped by. He was lost. This back in like 92, 93. And from that day on, I always kept an eye on him, and what he did for the sport and what he's doing for the sport and never wants to be away from it is huge. And he's more than just a race car driver. He's just a fan, hero of a lot of kids, and a good person. And you need guys like that to keep pushing forward. And for him to be an inductee is just unbelievable. Like, he is very cool to hang out with. And not only that, he's put in the time, he's put in the effort, and he was a hell of a wheelman.
Yeah, not just a great resume as a racer, but Midwest Off-Road Racing, our sportsman advocacy group and contingency group, and you know, anything sportsman rules-based all comes through Midwest Off-Road Racing. Dan was one of the people that started that group. He was the first president of MORE. He also had made huge efforts, huge strides forward in sportsman contingency programs, so putting money in sportsman drivers' pockets to help fund their racing. Short course kart, he was one of the earliest advocates for that class, helped develop the platform that became short course kart and mod kart. So without him, you could say that those two classes may not have ever existed. Think of how much different short course racing would look without those classes in the Midwest. You know, still at the racetrack every race weekend, working with Kenda Tires, making sure that the drivers that he's now supporting can compete as well as possible. Like you said, well-deserved, hero to a lot of us.
Good friend, though,
and
too.
Salt of the earth guy. We were just chewing the fat with him at Crandon before we even knew that he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And he offered us dinner, and we sat down and had dinner with him at the Kenda trailer. So, yeah, congratulations, Dan. Well-deserved.
Yeah, well said, Shane. And he's a good friend of ours over the years, too, him and his son Mikey and Nancy as well. It's a family, a whole affair in the off-road sport. And if one man deserves it, he's definitely right up in there. And he's just great for the sport. Like you said, he's always there, and he's there for the grassroots racer. And that's what I love about him the most.
Worth pointing out that he joins a few other guys who were exclusively short course racers in the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame. Jack Flannery, of course, was a unanimous inductee. He was kind of the first short course guy that opened the gates for everybody else. Scott Taylor, Johnny Greaves, also in there, along with a bunch of other guys that did, you know, desert and short course or short course plus something else. Guys like Rob Mack, Walker Evans, Evan Evans, Brad Lovell, a bunch of other drivers. So great to see that short course is getting some representation too in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's just a special moment. And the guys that you read off, it's cool that they're recognized for what they've done, because we have race tapes beyond race tapes and hours of watching, and watching them in person just become the best they possibly could. And it just almost brings a tear in my eyes of what we got to see in the past and what's in our future of this sport. So much young and great talent.
Well, that's a great segue. Speaking of young, great talent, there's one pro class I want to single out in this podcast. We'll dive in deeper to the season so far, I guess you could say, on the next episode again before we go to ERX in a few days here. Pro Light is starting to interest me a little bit more. Connor Berry, 2 second place finishes at Crandon, right there in the championship standings, right behind Johnny Holcher. Connor Berry going to ERX for the first time since 2022 might be disadvantaged with not having as many laps there as Holcher and Matt Wood and some of the other guys. And I think we're in for a really good two rounds of racing out of the Pro Lights when we go to ERX. You've got Gray Ledbetter, who's, I'm kind of waiting for her to have her breakthrough moment in Pro Light, but remember, she had a win and a second place finish in Pro Spec over at ERX back in 2023. And Travis Milhausen Jr., when it's going right for him, he's as fast as anybody, and that's his hometown track. I think we're in for a fun season the rest of the way for Pro Light. I think the points battle is going to be tighter than we thought after Wheatland. And I think ERX might be a place for Gray Ledbetter, Joe Machosik, some of the less proven drivers in the class to make a statement. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Travis Milhausen Jr., I'm looking for him to really lay it down. I believe this might be one of his last seasons in the Pro Light division. He doesn't waste any time. He wants to win every time out, and he doesn't care who's in front of him. He'll make room. I mean, Connor Berry, yeah, going back, he hasn't been there since 22, but he's going to adapt well. He's a race car driver, and anytime he gets in the truck, he's very quick. But to tame Johnny Holcher, it's going to be hard. He just shows that speed each day, and that he shows up with that Pro Light Saturday, Sunday in practice, no matter what. He's putting that truck on the top of the leaderboard. It's going to be hard to hold him down. But to take the next step in this Pro Light division, I'm thinking Matt Wood. This is time he's going to turn it around. ERX is a more flat-out, high horsepower. He's led laps at ERX. He knows how to do good there, and then it leads him into our second half of the season where I think he's going to show his true colors, because remember, he knows how to win in those Pro Lights.
Yeah, I think he's as good a pick as anybody else. Like I said, Antigo and Crandon kind of showed that Johnny Holcher isn't bulletproof in that Pro Light class. Barry's starting to pick up some steam. Remember, he didn't race at all last year. I think as Barry gets a little more dialed in, I think we're in just for a really good points battle for sure between those two, and then maybe, you know, one of those other drivers joins that fight a little bit.
Yeah, I believe that Johnny Holcher, anything can happen, right? I mean, he's going to have his bad days, and he'll take the good days when he can, but...
Two DNFs at ERX last year, by the way. It was engine problems, so it's not like that's something that's going to pop up again necessarily, and I don't want to jinx him by any means, but just for what it's worth, you can have a really bad weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah. So you got to do whatever possible. You got to make sure you're there. And even if you do have some issues, make sure you finish, right? You got to take what you can for points. And he wants that points championship. And those other guys in the Pro Light division and Gray Ledbetter are looking to get those wins. And Joey Machosik, I had a chance to talk with him in the off time since we left Crandon, and he had engine troubles. So sounds like they got a new power plant put in there. So they're going to bounce back, and that's just the teething problems, getting a different truck and learning everything. Sometimes you can't do anything about it, but the Pro Light class is going to be fun to watch.
Well, let's take a moment to talk about one of my favorite sportsman classes, of course, Light Buggy. First off, shout out Tom Perryman, got his first career win in Light Buggy at Crandon. Huge accomplishment, you know, given that he's part of that R&S Motorsports team with the Schultz boys and Taylor Roloff. Probably not going to be the last win that he gets in that class. But I was kind of cruising the point standings across all the sportsman divisions and sound the alarm, man. I think we're on red alert that Light Buggy is wide open. So we've been wondering behind the scenes when to start talking about adjusted points for sportsmen, because they get those two drop rounds. If you calculate the Light Buggy points right now adjusted for dropped races, Connor Schultz is sixth in the points. He's 37 points behind Evan Hockers.
Yeah, and that's what's going to make it so fun right up until the end. And we always talk about Schultz, Schultz this, Schultz that, but I feel we're getting
because he wins
that
all the time.
Oh, yeah, and there's nothing we can do, and people might get sick of it, but they're putting in the time. They're understanding the cars. They're building their own cars. Guys like Hockers and Perryman, they're finally starting to get used to what they have every weekend, and they're putting it on the table, and that's what's so much fun. There's guys that are in there for a long, long time, and there's racers that are getting better and better each and every time, and it's fun to call different names up on that podium. And granted, hey, we love the Schultz boys. They're awesome competitors, but it's fun to see everybody mix it up.
It looked early on in the season like it was Connor Schultz's class to lose once again after he won 12 out of 14 races last year. So there's 8 rounds left for Sportsman, ERX, Lena, Bark River, and Labor Day weekend at Crandon. And like I said, he's 37 points back. That's already dropping his 2 worst rounds. He's had 3 bad rounds already. So he's stuck with a bad round in onto his points total for the year. So he's got to gain just about 5 points each and every round to get back up to the lead. He's got his work cut out for him. We know that Hockers has been tough. Stingle is tough every single year and has been for centuries. Jake Shulman over the last couple of seasons really stepped his game up. Connor Schultz is kind of up against it at this point.
Yeah, he really is. And anything can happen, right? You can go from winning one day to breaking some simple thing on your car that's $5 and taking you out for the weekend. And it makes it stressful, but that's why we're going to run these really challenging racetracks. That's why ERX Motor Park, it's a little harder on these light buggies. It's not easy. You have to take care of your car, but at the same time, you're running a faster pace. You've driven one of these cars. They beat you up. So you got to physically and mentally be good. You have to be mentally and physically in great, great shape at that track.
Well, another Sportsman update, and you and I talked about this before we started recording today. Round 6, Super Stock Truck, Braden Boshaw had kind of a scary crash. Ran out of track space, ran into a concrete barrier. He's fine. But you have the update on both Braden and the truck itself. Tell us what's going on with Braden Boshaw.
Yeah, I had a chance to go over to Braden's. Me and you talked about it before we got on here, and he was pretty shaken, stirred, but definitely not injured to a point where it's going to make him stay out of the truck. It was more hurt in his heart to get the car back together. The truck's bent pretty good in the front, but they're bringing it to the frame straightener and going to pull it back over. I don't know exactly how bad it's bent, but from my eye, they have some work to do, but they got guys on it that know what they're doing, and the engine seemed like everything was all coherent. Nothing was wrong there, so it looks like they're going to bounce back. A lot of work at the Boshaw camp, but Braden Boshaw and his father, Scott, and Jarrett LaCasse, and a bunch of other guys that help him out, they don't stop working on it. It was a bummer deal, Braden said, a racing incident, no pointing fingers, and he wanted just to move forward. And when he hit that wall, he said it was kind of scary going off that, because you and I both know you're cresting that jump. You can't see what's on the other side of it.
It kind of happened off camera. So even if you're listening to this, you want to go back and watch it, you won't see it on the replay of the live stream.
Scott showed me. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I saw where Braden ended up afterwards. I glanced out the window and saw that, you know, he had disappeared from the battle he was in. And I looked and I kind of put 2 and 2 together where he was parked. I'm like, ew, it looks like he might have run into that barrier.
Scary.
That's the Sportsman heart and soul. That's the will that these drivers have. Like you said, they're already tearing things down. They're going to put it all back together, and they'll be at ERX.
Oh, they will be.
Well, race fans, don't forget that you should go check out the AMSOIL Shop by Vehicle tool at AMSOIL.com. That'll take the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. Doesn't matter if it's your daily driver, or a trail rig, or side-by-side, an ATV, a snowmobile, doesn't matter. Type in the vehicle that you have. They'll package up everything you need, send it right to your door, fast, free shipping. Visit AMSOIL.com to learn more, and we appreciate AMSOIL's support of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL. Well, our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL, he is in his second year racing in Pro 4. It's Robert Stout. Robert, thanks for carving out some time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
You know, we have a lot of different drivers across Champ Off-Road that come from different disciplines, but you have a really unique resume. You have raced Mazda MX-5 Cup, sports cars, GT racing. You're a performance driving instructor. Along the way, you picked up a UTV championship racing out on the West Coast. But what was the path that led you back to short course off-road racing?
For starters, it's just one of the most badass forms of racing on planet Earth, period, point blank. So I've kept up with it my whole life, and even for the 8 or 9 years before I ever got to run the UTV, I was a big fan of going to the races and always watching and keeping up with it all. So always had massive interest. To be honest, through, of course, my dad, a lot of our partnerships we had through sports car racing and the sprint cars and everything over there was through a lot of businesses and sponsors of the off-road community. So it really didn't make sense for me to come back over to where they already have exposure. It made a lot more sense for us to help expand their branding and marketing by taking it over to IMSA and over to King of the Wing Sprint Cars and things like that. So that was the path I chased for a long time. And to be honest, I don't even remember exactly how we ended up in the UTVs, other than it was just a great bang for buck. And the Wellers helped get our hands on a YXZ at the time. And it was just my dad and I just showed up at on our own and everything we needed done. It was just me and him. I'd never hit jumps. I had not raced in the dirt. So we were all brand new to it. And of course, a lot of things came together that improved that program and got us into, after the rookie of the year season, we ended up getting the championship the following year. But from there on out, it was kind of like off to the races for me. It was like, okay, yep, I forgot. This is exactly where I want to be racing. It made sports car racing boring, to be completely honest. So after a couple years off with the COVID stuff taking place, I knew what I wanted to do, which was to go chase a Pro 4 ride, of course, is always the goal and the dream. And I put my head down and I went to work really, really hard on it. So it took a little while and we could only piece together 2 weekends last season. And we were able to put together pretty much a full season for this year. So it's been incredible being able to have an opportunity here, even comparatively to everything else I've done. It's like, this is where I want to be. This racing is just absolutely insane.
What made you want to go like right into Pro 4? I know you were dominant in the side-by-sides. I got to broadcast you out in the Lucas Oil Off-Road Series, but to go from the side-by-sides and to jump into the baddest ass trucks out there, like, that's not an easy task, but obviously you figured you had it all dialed in.
Yeah. I don't know if I thought I had it dialed in. I definitely knew my biggest thing with piecing a season together here was going to be the fact that I knew I needed testing. There's a lot to learn with these trucks, even just the way the track develops and, you know, running the cushion, or how to maneuver it through the blue groove, all these random factors that all classes deal with. You deal with them a different way in the UTV. Outside of Pro 4 just being one of the most exciting things to watch, and, you know, watching Huseman and LeDuc and all those guys just sling these things around, it's what every little kid immediately sees a Pro 4 go around the track. You're like, that's it. I don't know why, but that's what I want to be doing. It's just awesome. But on top of that, I seem to really take a liking for the all-wheel drive, and the UTVs seem to suit me. And I even started realizing it in the sports cars. Like you said, I worked in a instructor for BMW on the lead for the West Coast. And with all their new all-wheel drive products coming out, for whatever reason, it just really tends to suit my driving style. So I thought that would be a natural, good next step instead of having to learn one extra element out in the dirt, which is, okay, well, now we're going to go to rear-wheel drive, and you certainly better know how to utilize that cushion and everything that comes with Pro 2, where the Pro 4, although, yeah, more aggressive, honestly, I think it can be a bit more forgiving with mild over-rotations, under-rotating, whatever it might be. But from a setup standpoint, they're so, so complex, and it doesn't matter how smart you are. It's something that just takes time and seat time and experience to be able to come back and really point the finger at where you want adjustments to be made, multiple bypass shocks, and it's just everything that's taking place with those trucks. But that's the dream, man. It's the top level. It's the baddest of the baddest. A lot of these names in the class might not be known right now, but it's a shame because there's not a slouch in that class right now. There's nothing but talented drivers. Everybody has stacked resumes that are competing in Pro 4 at the moment.
When you showed up to Crandon, the June race last year, and made your debut in Pro 4, were you intimidated being on the starting grid and looking over and it's like CJ Greaves, Johnny Greaves, Jimmy Henderson, all, you know, Kyle Chaney, all these guys that have won a billion races. Was that intimidating at all?
Intimidating, no. Inspiring, for sure. I take big pride in that. I really don't want to go race anywhere where there's not the big names. I'd rather go do two massive competitive weekends a year than do 16 easier, if you will, weekends.
Sure.
I don't think there was any intimidation there, maybe until like the middle of turn one, when I couldn't see and my visor was covered and reality kicked back in that I was here. But no, it's just exactly who I want to be battling with. It's who I believe I deserve to be battling and showcasing myself against. And I don't want to be able to show up and just feel like I can roll the truck out and just go win, because that means I'm not getting challenged enough by the people around me. And these guys are doing a really good job. I'm making everything a challenge. Not to mention that June race last year, they rained out practice, qualifying, and the first race.
Yeah.
So my very first lap was into turn one at full speed.
Wow, now what better way to throw you into the seat of the Pro 4, right? Here you go, Robert. It's a Pro 4. Let's see what you can learn. How did you like end up not only just getting into the Pro 4 truck, but everyone knows that you're underneath the same camp as Adrian Chaney. But you could have picked anywhere else to start, maybe your own team. But what made you lead into going with Adrian?
Well, there was a couple different contributing factors there and how it all ended up working for all of us. But really just started with a conversation with my dad and Adrian. I think at Crandon in 2023, that would have been. And not about anything specific, but the fact that they were building a new truck for Adrian, which he raced last year and did very well with. They had a second truck, and I think there's, you know, a long-term business idea that they are taking a look at of, you know, hey, if Adrian does decide to hang it up one day, and I'm not sure he ever will or even has a reason to, he's just in wicked shape and all the energy in the world, how do we keep this team going and create a long-term program here and also be able to create a path to help get people into Pro 4? How do we create more openings to get more competitors into the class? So it was really cool for Adrian to even consider that idea and offer running a two-truck program. But I'll tell you what really evolved from there is we found out that he was going to be testing at Glen Helen, and I got word of it, and I'm only about an hour and a half from there. So I just went out cold, basically, and showed up at his test and stood there and shook everybody's hands and said hello. And
that was a no-brainer.
Yeah, I was just hoping to God Adrian would ask if I wanted to drive, right? So I'm just standing there itching at the bit.
Your helmet hanging from your buckle or what?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready to go, man. Didn't know a single person there and shook all their hands, said hi. And Adrian, of course, being Adrian, looked right at me. And he's like, do you want to drive it? I'm like, I would love to drive it. And immediately jumped right in and did a few laps and did really, really well. I felt really comfortable at Glen Helen, comfortable in the truck. Like, it just worked for some reason. A lot of the team guys couldn't even believe I hadn't driven one before. I was like, man, it just does everything well. It does everything you want it to do. Like everything I've tried to make my UTV do, I'm like, this just does, has power. It does turn, does all the things you want. And from there, then it was game on, and it was, okay, how do we make this work? What do the numbers look like? How do we make this happen? So Adrian created an opportunity, and it was same old deal, kind of right time, right place, the right conversation happening in the right moments, and a door opened. I wasn't sure if I could ever make it happen, but we buckled up and managed to make it work. I was determined to make a Pro 4 opportunity happen for myself. So just really excited that I'm here.
A lot of your background and even your day job now as a BMW performance driving instructor, you're at the same time kind of a tool that engineers and manufacturers are using to get feedback on the cars that you're driving. How much of that are you bringing to Adrian and Case Gunderson and that whole team?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of perks of driving so many different cars and series over the years, for good and bad. But one of the good things is I'm pretty adaptable now at this point and have had to go through a lot of different setup configurations in these different style vehicles. I know I don't have much knowledge on the Pro 4 trucks and everything they entail, but I knew that going in and was really open-minded to learn. But my biggest thing right out of the gate was simply listening to them. I don't know if that's the best truck in the world, the worst truck in the world, right? I come back, take a look at some outboard video. I make sure it's always filmed, always watch my onboards, try to go through any data I have. And Michael Kraling and Adrian have been good with helping me out and just, okay, here's what I'm feeling. And they're saying, yep, and here's why. And I'm like, okay, so I can start connecting some dots. But now it's been really beneficial now as I get a little bit more seed time and being able to come back and really help point the finger at maybe what a problem area might be, or some things that could be improved upon. So definitely trying to bring the knowledge that I have to the table as well. But at the end of the day, I'm still the new guy here. I still know I need to learn more than anything. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's still, decade plus worth of knowledge that I do have that I certainly try to bring to the table to help out with anything we can and just keep developing these things as much as physically possible, because it's a tough learning curve and the competition is not slouching. So we can't afford to either.
Compared to some of the other stuff that you've driven and you've competed in, how does Pro 4 compare and contrast to that, maybe in different ways that it is demanding on you? And have you had to unlearn some things to get faster in the Pro 4?
That's a great question. And even as of yesterday, still staring at video, every video I can find, I think there's things that I'm trying to do with this truck that are maybe some more sports car style habits and even ones that I applied to the UTV. And I think it worked well in the UTV because with the lack of power, you're not really relying on maybe the cushion as much or taking a longer distance around a turn. You're really trying to shorten the path, get the wheel straight. So I'd manipulate the lines different ways that really suited the UTV. And now as I try to apply that to the Pro 4, I'm definitely going back and looking at outboard videos and going, oh man, okay, that doesn't seem to benefit me as much here. You know, with all the extra power, these guys can keep their foot in it, maybe go a little wider, go into some of the heavier dirt, and they can afford to keep that momentum up. So it's a little bit of unlearning definitely that I'm doing or just adapting, just things that I thought maybe would be beneficial. I'm finding there's more benefit in keeping the power down here, or hey, it's more beneficial to get off the power sooner, whatever the case is. They're very different for sure all the way around. The one thing that is the same is generally manipulating the weight transfer. So that's one thing that really did carry over and make me comfortable kind of out of the gate is just the setting of the nose, understanding when you go to power, how it's picking the front end up and manipulating the rotation of the truck. So for me, it's just learning where the truck wants to be from a speed standpoint, as opposed to what I maybe think it is. And the changing of the track conditions is definitely something that the kids who grew up running the mod carts and everything, you know, they see things and make driving changes to their line very, very quickly, that for me, I see it, but I really got to think through what the correct next step is to take advantage of the track changing its conditions. Because obviously in sports car racing and such, that's certainly not the case. So definitely some learning curve to it. It does have its differences, but the biggest one simply being with all the changes at your disposal with a Pro 4 truck, all the options you have to make setup adjustments, is learning which setup adjustments are needed for certain scenarios. So that's really where I'm mentally trying to put my focus at.
So when you're driving, obviously a Pro 4, I mean, the first day getting in that beast, you're probably like, man, I could drive a Pro 4 so wicked fast. I mean, that day's fun. The next couple weeks are fun. But then it like plateaus because you go from having fun to where you got to compete, right? Like, how is that transition in your own mind? Like going from, hey, we're having fun, and now you're trying to lay the truck out, get it dialed in. I mean, I can just tell by talking to you in the prior weeks how you want to compete up in the top and the best of the best. Are you over that fun spot, or are you still enjoying it as you're going?
I'd say the fun spot starts over again every time, pretty much as soon as I hit the first corner of every session. And then all the fun comes thrilling back to life, of course, because they are just, without a doubt, with some of the most awesome things any racer will have an opportunity to drive. But it's when you get out of the truck, I mean, it's business, right? The celebration was, hey, we've got some partners on board that are going to allow us to be able to go compete for a full season. That's happy time. And the very next day it was, okay, now we got to go to work on delivering and performing here. So at this point, I don't want to call it work. It's not work. But it's what I've done every year of my life, and I have a goal always. So, and I want to be working towards it. And like you said, I have an expectation of myself 100%. I fully expect to be competing with the best of the best. and I don't plan on waiting around very long to figure out how to get there. I certainly don't expect to go out in my first 1, 2, 3 weekends and bang doors at CJ Greaves for a win, but I certainly expect myself to be able to be in the hunt. And even Crandon last year, I felt pretty satisfied running as high as third place and finishing in the top five. And I felt like we were definitely on the right track. But now kind of stalemating a little bit at this point and not being able to get the leaps of progression that I'm really wanting and that the team is wanting. Now it's like, okay, it's time to get really serious here and put our heads down. Because we're here to do one thing at the end of the day, and it's to try to go win. So the fun part comes whenever we get to go out in that truck and do well. First comes the work, and right now we're taking a big step to the drawing board here with myself and this truck, and it's time to go to work and so that we can start having fun again, right?
Given that you've had kind of a rocky start to the year so far, it comes across just as you're talking to us, you're a confident guy and you've earned that confidence based on your background and all different kinds of racing. But where's your confidence level at right now? And do you have to kind of recalibrate yourself mentally a little bit to take that big step forward?
Yeah, I feel my confidence overall is still pretty high. I will say specifically Crandon by far is giving myself and the current setup, at least we ran this past weekend in the truck, My confidence has gone down at Crandon a little bit because it's just a wicked track and the landings of some of those jumps. And I went for a big tumble there last season as well.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I want to say it's a lack of confidence as much as an understanding of kind of where we're at now and what I am kind of wanting out of the truck, what the truck is delivering, and okay, what do we need in order to get back into this sweet spot and into the window we need to be in. So I feel good about everything that we're doing, but it's definitely tough when we don't have the funds to just go do multiple years of this. So we've got a 1-year deal that we're scratching to even be able to go to a test here or there. So for me, it's every time something happens or, you know, I get hung out, I get a flat tire, whatever a little issue may be, I kind of go into conservative mode of, okay, let's wait for that mandatory caution or, okay, I'm on the lap down now with 3 laps to go. I'm not going to go out and go wring the truck's neck and risk breaking, you know, whatever it may be, a transmission or a shock or engine or whatever. So it's not so much a lack of confidence as much as I feel like I need to be a little conservative in certain moments just to be smart and think big picture when it's kind of taking away learning opportunity for me of running the truck at 110% full pace. So again, it's not a lack of confidence as much as I'd say a lack of being able to take advantage of the seat time we've gotten. And unfortunately, we've had a lot of variables through all my weekends at this point that have removed a significant amount of my seat time I should have had in the first place. So the lack of seat time at the end of the day is probably the most detrimental thing for us at this point. But I'm just trying to be really smart every time I get in the truck and remember what the long-term goal is here and make sure that we're in a good position to always come back and try to be better the following weekend.
It's not that you lack confidence. It's that you are becoming more aware of how far up the mountain you are and how far away the top is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, you know, you don't just go catch a CJ Greaves overnight.
Hey, there's guys that have been trying it for 10 years.
Yeah, and I'm trying to do a 2.5 lap practice and at a track I've never been to and be like, okay, cool, I think I can go compete with the best of all time. So it's tough for sure, and I do see it's a long road, right? I'm not going to get there right away and not in one session. So I'm just trying to be really smart about my decision-making as I go. And because it's Pro 4, I mean, nature of the beast is these things are going to break parts just because they are on the ragged edge of any off-road vehicle in the world. So that stuff's going to happen. You know, you're going to have those expenses, that lack of seat time that maybe you should have gotten. And because of that, I don't want to add any more risk or potential for that to take place than there kind of already is in this class to begin with. So just trying to be really smart with all my decision-making.
When you're watching like race tape and all that, Robert, I know you're watching your own truck a lot, majority to try to get it better, but how much are you learning off of the other drivers, not only off of tape, but in person when you do get a chance to run with them, like say in a practice, are you trying to watch their truck? I know every truck's different, but how much does that play into factor for you?
Yeah, certainly a big factor. And again, always kind of being the new guy jumping from series to series over the years, I've learned that kind of have to adapt to that pretty quickly. But for me, again, being so new with the truck and not totally having a complete understanding of what manipulates the setup changes in the truck, for me right now, it's still a, okay, where do I feel he's gaining on me? Or where do I feel he just right. pulled truck length on me? So it's okay, is it braking onto the entry of the turn? Is it an exit? Is it rotating harder, a different line, you know, than I'm running or what I'm seeing? So I'm always watching and learning, and even have spotters kind of helping me out with different things that are happening in different lines getting run.
Using their braking points as well.
Yeah. So, and that's where Adrian's been a good help with hitting a lot of those baselines for me every weekend. Hey, here's where you want to be here. We're looking to accomplish this. The track tends to develop this way. So I'm repeating all this information in my head nonstop, obviously picking other drivers' brains about anything I can. But yeah, it's massive to have to do it, because for me, it's always a why when I get back out of the truck. So, okay, he was faster on the entry of that turn. Why? Was he braking later? Was he off the brake earlier and rotating it earlier? Can right. I do that? Why can't I do that? Okay, then we need to look at this to make a change so I can do that. So that's just kind of the way I've always reverse engineered what I'm doing to try to learn what the truck may or may not need. But yeah, literally right now with two laps of practice and two laps of qualifying to work with, it's basically everything I can do at my disposal to try to learn as fast as I physically can right now.
Sounds easy, right? Hey, Shane, how does it sound?
Yeah, that's why everybody does it. I can tell, Robert, that you're extremely analytical, and even the way that you're describing, you know, making adjustments on the fly while driving, you're analytical with the steering wheel in your hands. Do you think that all the great drivers are that way, or are there guys that just are more, you know, instinct and what the truck feels like, and they can just kind of not see to the pants drive, but just rely on more instinct than analytics?
Yeah, it's a great topic of conversation because I always try to leverage myself one way or the other, because there's absolutely two types of driving style, technically three, but majority of the world, about 98% of the people out there and racers, there's really two, right? There's two style drivers, and Derek Daly wrote a great book on it a while back that basically says, hey, there's the driver that goes out and they're not even sure why, natural talent, that natural feel that some guys just have. And they can go out and wring the car's neck and get every ounce of time out of that car. But they might come back afterwards and say, I don't know what it's doing, right? Like, if they're at the top of the timesheet, it's, hey, the car's good. If they're at the bottom of the timesheet, then they're saying, that's as fast as that car can possibly go right now. I don't know why we're slow, but we're slow. And it's not because of the driver, right? There's absolutely those people. Juan Pablo Montoya is a good example of it. Robbie Gordon is a good example of it. Granted, maybe Robbie a little better with feedback and such, but definitely that natural talent, just raw speed behind the wheel no matter what. And then there's absolutely the analytical side, which is spending more time behind the wheel, thinking about what the truck is doing, as opposed to just chasing outright pace with the intent to try to develop that a little bit better and engineer it. And if you go look at F1 teams' history in the past, right, they always try to get one of each of those drivers so they can really see the raw speed, but also get that good feedback. And somewhere in the middle, we get those generational talents that we see come up through the ranks every now and then, where they've just got that perfect combination of both of them. And I certainly try to be, I'd say I'm definitely more on the analytical side of that, absolutely. But off-road has certainly forced me to start leaning the other way, because if you can't get up on the wheel within two laps and put a respectable lap down, then you don't have any real handling data to bring back to the team anyways. So if you really want to be successful in short course off-road, you kind of have to learn how to be both of those people.
It seems kind of evident that you could learn the analytical side better by, well, experience for one, and just completely understanding, you know, every nut and bolt on the car front to back. How does a driver actually develop the other side, though?
You know, that's a really good question. And for me, I was kind of forced into having to learn that, because in sports car racing, you may get a full promoter test day, and then you've got your two or three official practice sessions before you're qualifying. And every session is minimum 25 minutes. And IMSA, it'll be up to an hour and a half. So you've got a lot of time to roll out, take your time, warm it up, feel everything out. And then all of a sudden I get into off-road and they're like, oh, you've never hit a jump and you've never been on the dirt. You've got two laps, go send it and figure it out. So definitely forced me to start, even when I'm at work, right, doing lapping sessions and things like that, just getting myself out of the mindset of we can take our time and getting into the mindset of, okay, I'm on track. It's time to do my job and it's time to do it right now. And honestly, SST, the Stadium Super Trucks, were a big help with that, because you get a 20-minute qualifier on Friday and then that's it. You stage up for the race. So it's time to get after it right out of the gate. So the evolution of running the UTV in Lucas, where we did have a little more practice time, and then into the Stadium Trucks and now into this monster, has been pretty good for me to start adapting and getting myself in just the mindset of attacking it right out of the gate. But you're right, at the end of the day, it's experience and confidence that you can go find the limit and know where that is right out of the gate without working up to it. And that just, it just takes seat time, and it's the biggest variable for sure.
And that hurts so much. I always said that, I think, in the prior races to Shane. I think back in the day when I was a kid watching on the fence, that there was so much more practice, right? They got 3 to 5 laps in the morning, then you got some practice the next morning. Now it's like you get some shakedown laps, and if a guy breaks, it seems like we have a few and far and in between group of drivers that come out at the halfway point of the day and shake down. But I think our drivers would be even better and prove that they can show more with their trucks if we had more laps. And that's just coming from me as well.
I completely agree. And just sports cars into Lucas, we had three, if I remember correctly, I think we had 3 3 lap practices. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, what is anyone supposed to do at 3 3 lap practices? And now we're here and it's a single 3 lap practice, which I have a bone to pick with that, because I've never completed 3 full speed laps inside of one of those practice sessions. It is a half speed roll around for 7/8 of the lap, and then you accelerate into your second lap. But regardless, it's man, it's really tough. And I absolutely think if they could allow us to have more practice time, and again, it doesn't even need to be a ton more, maybe 2 5 lap practices, whatever it might be. What it does is allows us to develop the trucks better. So good chance of less mechanical issues or poor setup scenarios that make people running off pace. It also gets driver confidence in the track and understanding right where they can position the truck, just even a few extra laps. It makes such a difference of knowing what your truck's going to do in different scenarios in that given turn, especially as the track adapts. So now suddenly when we're racing, we also don't have people coming in, you know, at 3 different closing rates of speed to a turn, trying to figure out what the track wants, what the truck wants. That's already figured out. So now when we're racing, we can do close quarter, inch by inch racing, because we know exactly what to expect out of that truck, exactly what to expect out of the track. So now we're turning faster laps with more developed vehicles, and the drivers are more confident and comfortable running the truck right at that limit to even put on a better race. So outside of the maybe expenses of the wear and tear on the vehicle of doing even just a couple extra laps, I'd say that's the only negative argument you could make for why that would not benefit everything from driver development to truck development to better racing, which turns to better TV and more sponsor support. I think it's a massive, massive benefit. But it's also good. I see what they're doing at the sportsman classes, and it's very good fun to create those opportunities of those classes. But any pro series should probably have more than 2 or 3 laps of practice, I would imagine, if given the opportunity. So that's not my ballpark or department, and maybe it's just me being the new guy, but I don't see any downside of people having more practice opportunities.
I think if you started a petition, you'd get a full sheet of signatures fast.
I'll sign it for you, bud, right away. Shane will too.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't want to take away from the sportsmen. They need as much seat time as ever, as did I in my UTV. But man, I feel like a big benefit would come out of the pro classes, even just getting one more session or a couple more laps added to a session. It really needs to be separate sessions so you can truly do, you know, some data review and setup changes and such.
I'll give you 3, Robert. I'll give you 3 laps, okay? Learn it all in 3 laps. No.
Yeah, I did. Even qualifying, I think it was at like Wheatland, I did like 2 laps, came around, and I had like 1 miss shift. I'm like, all right, I'm like, here we go. Lap 3 is going to be the money lap. and the checkered comes out. I go flying through turn one. I didn't even see it. And my spotter's on the radio going, that's checkered. It's checkered. I'm like, checkered? I'm like, I just figured out where to shift. It's just insane. He had to jump out a new truck. And, you know, and everybody puts new parts and pieces. You know, people are changing out diffs and engines and different companies and trying new shocks and all these things. You show up to a track you've never been to with a 150-foot tabletop and wind blowing. And, yeah, it's just a lot to try to learn and figure out, much less try to truly develop and make it better, unless you do have, you know, the decade of experience where you're not trying to learn a lot of things that maybe I'm still trying to learn as the new guy that my thought's going towards. So it's tough, but I even CJ Greaves, I'd like to believe, would want to sign that petition to get a few extra laps in if he had the opportunity.
Hey, so looking ahead to the task at hand, ERX Motor Park coming up next. You've never been there, never raced there before. What does success look like for you at ERX?
Testing. For sure, testing is what success would look like. And this track, for what it's worth, probably my favorite track. I was excited at least about going to this year because, man, some epic racing has come out of that facility. It just looks awesome. But definitely a momentum track, lots of blind, pressed elevation, off-camber turns, things like that. So it's simply not a track, at least from what I've seen, I don't think this track you can just go out and in two laps be like, okay, I've got it. That track like that takes time where you can't see over bends and around these turns and you're running them at a really high momentum. It's hard to sneak up to that. So testing is pretty much all but mandatory, I think, if you want to be competitive there without testing. Basically, the goal would be come Sunday, hopefully we've got a dog to go fight with. Because again, just four laps on Friday and is just not enough from even a driver to find probably the limit of a track like that if they've never been to it. So that's a tough one, which is what kind of why I was so excited to go. It's tentative at the moment because we actually did just have a engine issue through some testing, and we are currently scrambling right now to try to get all of that back together and hopefully get an engine back in this truck and see what we can make happen for that. So we'll see. But man, I sure hope I get the opportunity to go run ERX because that track just looks awesome.
Boy, you're ready for anything, it seems like, though, right? Nothing surprises you. I mean, all the great luck you've had so far, it just seems like you've been in that slump. I believe, like, if you can just get your feet down in that soft soil at ERX, I think your drivability is going to be very great there. And I think you're going to match a lot of your driving there because I've watched you out west a lot, and I think you'll adapt very well. So hopefully that engine comes together quick, buddy.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Again, it's the nature of the beast, Pro 4, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter how many parts you start that season off with. You never know how many you're going to go through or not throughout the season. So, yeah, the guys are working hard. They're thrashing to get something back together for us. But, yeah, ERX just looks awesome. And I do feel pretty, again, confident in myself at getting up to a speed pretty quick. But we've just been doing a lot of chasing gremlins. Steering, power steering stuff has really been fighting me this season a lot. A couple little failures along the way. Reverse actuators and, you know, now transmissions need rebuilt. So those guys thrashed out at Crandon and we've just kind of been on our heels for a while. So right now we're just kind of, okay, let's take a step back. Let's get this thing freshened back up. And instead of coming back from every session thinking, do we need to fix something or get something ready for the next session? We want that thought process to always be when we come back, okay, what can we do to now make it better? And we haven't really been there. We've been trying to play catch up every weekend, it seems. So hopefully we can do a little reset here and try to get ahead of this thing a bit into the back half of the season.
You know, that really parallels, Brent and I had a conversation at the end of the Antigo weekend with Paul Wolf, and he was talking about how last year, you know, they threw the truck together and they said they were so far off on setup and you name it. And they were, you know, just a little bit off. So they were trying to make those, you know, 5%, 10% gains in different areas. And Paul said now that he's got the experience a little bit and they're more comfortable with the truck and learning how it works, now they're chasing 0.5% here and there. You know, is that kind of the roadmap that you see?
Yeah. They've done a great job with it. I haven't spoke to them too much. Those are all really nice guys over there in that camp. Glad to see how well they've been doing now. I guess for me, I personally feel like I need to get those 5-10% improvements in myself and learning what the truck is capable of.
Sure.
But I feel like I'm just now kind of getting to that point of, okay, I've kind of found what I can find, and I know there's more there, given my confidence to go try to get that out of the truck. So now again, I'm just now getting to the confidence point with my feedback of going, okay, I'm starting to learn that area right there. That's on me. I need to go review myself and figure out what changes I need to make. But over here, when the truck's doing this, okay, this is not on me. This is something we need to address from a setup standpoint. So I want to say for me, it's so much, are we chasing something small or big, as much as where do we need to chase whatever it is we're trying to find? And it's like, okay, if I know for sure I've got 2 tenths laying in me there, and I've got this little bit over here that I can adjust. But now I'm getting that confidence and understanding in the truck to come back and say, okay, here's what I need this truck to do to help me out in this scenario and in that scenario. So for me, it's just wrapping my head around where to find those adjustments and be able to just give our crew the best feedback I can on this truck and what I want it to do. And so many people have been asking me since I've been in it, you know, what do you think? Do you think it's fast? You know, do you think it's pulling good? Do you think it's doing this? I'm like, I don't have anything to compare it to. I don't really know. I don't know if it's pulling good. It could be fastest damn engine in the whole field. I have nothing to really relate it to. And I really try to practice by myself just to put some focus on what I need to. So I don't really get a good comparison until we get into the race and really get side by side with people on certain things. But it's just been a big learning curve all the way around, and being able to bring the best feedback I can to the team. And for them to start obviously building trust in me and my feedback, so we can continue making improvements in the right direction here.
I always feel like when Shane and I are doing the broadcast and even on Flow, like we talk about that confidence. You probably said it about 15 times in that last conversation, and it's unreal that I don't know how to stress that even more, because if you don't have the confidence, you're not even going the right direction, right? There's guys out there that are out there for fifth place. I mean, obviously talking to you this whole time, you want to win like no other, and it's hard to get through people. I mean, at least in your division, that don't want to be like that. But even in the sportsman divisions and other classes, if you're running against guys like that, they're in the way at the same time when you're trying to perform at your best.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to do. And especially working with people that maybe you hadn't worked with before, and building that confidence. I mean, at the end of the day, you could take any car, and I really see this in sports car racing, and you could say, hey, here's the fastest setup that car could ever have here at this track. And that might be totally true. But if the car is on the ragged edge of feeling like it's going to kill you the entire time you're driving it, okay, well, is that going to win you a race over the course of a half hour to an hour, whatever it may be? Probably not. So we need to make some adjustments to make the driver feel better, so now they have confidence so they can go racing with it. And you see in qualifying, right? There's a reason qualifying setups exist. And again, you see this more on asphalt where it's, hey, trim it out, hang it out. You only have to do it for 2 laps. Try to piece it together and put in a qualifier, right? But then right. When it comes time to race, it's okay. I'm not sure I have the confidence to be inch by inch racing against a group of people with that setup. That'll be a handful. I'm not sure I can get all my marks all the time. So yeah, there's a big balance there of okay, the setup might be fast, but is there drivability there? Is there comfort there? Because once the driver does get confidence, you can see it, and especially in Pro 4, having that mindset of knowing you can put your truck anywhere you want to the inch, and have that confidence that it will do it. You can do a lot of things with a Pro 4 truck with that level of confidence, as we see from majority of people in the class, really.
Jimmy Henderson is a great example of that. If you know, I don't know how closely you were watching in your time away, but from 6 years ago to now, Jimmy Henderson, completely different guy. And that's, I think, exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And it takes a level of confidence. Sometimes it takes something happening to kind of open your eyes to want to go get that.
Consistency is huge, though.
Exactly. Consistency is so big. And sometimes it's hard for a driver to maybe know their truck is fast in that configuration. But if it's not something that suits you or your driving style, and maybe you can be fast one lap, but it forces you into mistakes and bad situations the next two or three. Okay, well, now as a driver, how do I go tell the team that knows that truck is fast that I need this changed a little bit in order for me to really sustain it over the course of a run? And it takes just time getting comfortable with the people that you're working with and around you. And there's no way to fast track that. You just got to have some time and conversations and build that trust and confidence in one another as people, to then start wrapping our heads around why we're all trying to make the decisions that all of us are trying to make. So, yeah, I mean, it takes confidence not just drive the truck, but to also come back and have the confidence in what your feedback is going to be and what you feel you actually need as a driver. And that's probably something that I still do need to get better at is trusting myself a bit when I come back and I'm feeling something and trusting that what I'm feeling is the correct thing and it should be addressed.
It's so much more fun too when you're consistent as well as a race car driver to come back, and especially if you're out in the lead and you can get some fresh air and you run 8 consistent laps within, you know, a half a second, rather than, hey man, I had the quickest lap of the race, but yeah, I got 4th and I wasn't consistent for 2. I always tried to make that my biggest priority, even in my circle track days. Like, hey, I want to make sure I'm within, you know, a couple tenths every lap, so you know the car is good. It can be good one time and then it's shit for the rest of the day.
Exactly right. And yeah, like sprint car racing was a good example of that. And hey, I need that right rear tire to be there at the end of the race, so I could go put this thing in a qualifying setup and I'll check out at the beginning of the race. But if at the halfway point I'm dropping like a rock, it's not going to do me any good, right? So it's, you got to take all that into consideration. And with Pro 4, it's not so much that from a setup standpoint. I mean, it is more driver comfort and drivability, but a lot of that is really with, from a setup standpoint, the track changing condition, right? There's not overheating tires or whatever the case is so much in the dirt as it would be on asphalt. But it's okay, whenever this track tends to notoriously blue groove by the end, and we know it might be a bit wet at the beginning, and where do we want our truck to be best at? Do we want something fast in the wet, muddy start because we're starting back and need to make up spots? Or do we want to have a dog in the fight at the last lap whenever we know it's going to be blue grooved over? So that's same idea, same concept, right? But a different way of looking at it in the off-road world is making those adjustments of where you want to be good. Because yeah, if you have the fastest setup in the world and that truck turns in like a dart, it's only going to be so good if you can drive it with that level of precision at all times. And that's not going to happen in Pro 4, whether you like it or not, because you're going to get blinded by roost and then hit a rut. Now there's a hole there that wasn't there last lap, and so many changing variables, which is, I think, what makes it so awesome and makes me so eager to want to stay in that class and get back to it, because it's a driving challenge that I haven't really had at that level for a very long time. It's probably been 10 years since I've felt as challenged as I feel trying to wrap my head around everything that's happening with these tracks and the dirt and these Pro 4 trucks and everything that they have accessible to them.
You touched on this just a moment ago, you know, looking ahead to the future beyond 2025, you know, you have mentioned that you're trying to survive this full season first and then see what awaits you. But does short course off-road seem like a good long-term home for you as a racer, as a competitor?
If it were up to me right now, let's just say it hit the lottery tomorrow, which I'm going to go ahead and play it anyway.
Hell yeah.
if I hit the lottery tomorrow, I could promise you I will be Pro 4 racing until I physically can't do it anymore. It's where I want to be. It's awesome. And honestly, I think it's a good selling point comparatively to a lot of other things I've done. There's really good branding on the truck. So even the way the body panels are very, very large as opposed to maybe an open wheel car. So it's great exposure for companies. You know, it's on Fox Sports. We have the live stream. Social media goes crazy with it because it's so many highlight reels come out of a short course weekend. And the fact that it's open wheel rule, open tires, shocks, all these things. Well, now you can go actually get some real support and some real companies that want to be a part of it and want to compete against their, you know, maybe other shock competitor or tire competitor or whatever it may be. So there's real opportunity to gain support if you're doing well, and real opportunity, more importantly, to give back to those companies on that support with the exposure that that series provides. So it made a lot of sense for me to turn my career path this direction. Of course, I swung for the fences with the Pro 4 class as soon as I could. So who knows what the future will hold, but I can promise you I'm working every single day, as I have been for the past year and a half, to try to keep this deal going and try to stay in this class, because it's just not something you figure out in 1 year and go beat the best in the world. So it takes years to be at this level, and it's the exact level I want to be at.
When you get to hang out and cut up with your GT, your IMSA racing buddies, are they asking you questions about the off-road world?
Yeah, they all keep telling me that I'm going to be able to fit back in these Italian sports cars in a couple years the way I keep running these. I think I'm getting shorter every time I leave a race weekend. Honestly, they all think it's crazy. They all think it's insane. And the easiest way I describe it to them, I'm like, it's a three-dimensional track as opposed to two-dimensional, right? Like, it's sure. We've got ruts and berms and holes. I was like, and on top of that, it changes every single lap, every single session. People were trying to, in sports cars and asphalt racing, we're trying to predict setup changes to the half a PSI in the tire, one click of rebound or compression changes because, oh, well, that's at 2 p.m. so the track temperature might be 10 degrees hotter.
Right. You're looking at temperature and humidity, and
we have it all.
Yeah. Now here it's like very like, oh, you want to predict what that track's going to do? They're like, yeah, good luck. You got to predict how much the water truck driver wants to turn that nozzle or not. There's no predicting any of it. So there's so many variables, but it's what makes it so dang exciting. And every time I get out of the truck, there's so much to think about and wrap your head around. But now I get back into a sports car, and by like lap two or three, I mean, I love sports car racing. It's what I've done my whole life. But after a couple laps, I'm like, all right, like find my brain kind of wandering off. I'm like, well, I've got another quarter mile till the next turn, and I have no jumps or anything in the way. So that's nice. So it's just the Pro 4 division's taken my excitement level behind the wheel so high that everything else just seems a little dull comparatively to what that truck is and what it's capable of.
You can tell them all, you can predict anything you want, but you can guarantee the truck won't look the same when you finish.
That is a guarantee every time. I was doing some stats on last year, and it was early on. We were only a few weeks in. But somewhere along the way, I came up with the numbers. If it was like, on average, there was like a 25% chance you will flip in a race. You have a 25% chance you will have a mechanical failure, and a 50% chance you'll see the checkered flag without either of the other two happening. I was like, if that happened in sports car racing, you said you got a 50% chance you're not going to flip or the car is going to break. People would lose their minds, right? They'd be like,
sign me up. Like,
I was like, and not only that, I'm like, just because you flipped doesn't mean you're out. Like, there was quite a few races won last year by a truck that had flipped in that race. I'm like, that's racing right there. That's badass stuff.
The sense I'm getting, Robert, is that this opportunity is exciting to you. You feel like you're really grateful to have this opportunity to race in off-road.
No, I'm just really grateful for the opportunity, and Adrian Chenny's been so cool providing the opportunity. And again, just trying to create a pathway for people to get up into that class, because it's a difficult thing to do, and certainly to try to take on your own and to learn all that on your own. So him providing that opportunity is big. Like we talked about earlier, Beneath Underwear came on board this year as the primary sponsor, and so cool of them to do that. And for anybody that's unaware, because everybody always asks, right, what does that even mean? It's BN3TH, right? The E being backwards. So Beneath underwear company, and they do swim trunks, workout shorts, t-shirts, socks, whole apparel line there. And it's meant for fitness, things like this, sweatpants, you name it. But just a great company with really great tools and everything that are a part of it. And I'm not even saying it just because they're supporting me. It's legitimately the best underwear and socks you will ever wear.
I'll vouch for that, by the way. Not a paid plug here, but they are really great underwear.
It's really good underwear. So cool to have them on board and come showcase this a little bit and be a part of the program. And the guys love off-road racing over there as well. So, and really glad that we're going to see the series come out to Glen Helen at the end of the year, because obviously there's a whole untapped market down here right now for the off-road industry and some of the potential partners like Beneath Underwear and other companies down in this area that I think will be really excited to come out and see these races. Because as you guys know, seeing it on TV, you know if it's exciting on TV, that it's out of control in person. And until you really see in person all these trucks come flying into Turn 1 together, that's when the hair raises on your arm.
You have to get the dust in your eyes and feel the ground shake. You have to be there.
Literally. You gotta be there. You got to feel it and see it, because it is it's as cool as it gets. So, yeah, glad they're doing that. Super pump Beneath partnered with us on this, and that Adrian was even willing to give me that opportunity in the first place.
Well, hey, Robert, we appreciate you taking some time. We hope that you have a fantastic Independence Day weekend, and best of luck trying to make it to ERX. We hope to see you there.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on the show and continuing to talk about the sport and whatever we can do to keep getting our names and the sport we love so much out there in the market. So thank you guys for doing everything you do and calling the races and having a great time while you do it.
Well, that's just about it for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. Brent, Independence Day weekend. Brent, you got any big plans for the long weekend here?
Not too much, dude. Just going to hang out with family and friends and just go to the local Bark River Parade and chill out. Enjoy the nice weather, like you said. Hopefully everybody around our area and over around our, all of our family and friends in the off-road community have a great day and everything goes well. It's be safe out there. That's the big thing.
Yeah, we want to see all of you at ERX or tuning in, and we want to see all of you with all the fingers that you're going to start this weekend with. So please be careful out there. Yeah, knock on wood now, or you may not be able to after the incident, as it'll become known. Hopefully nothing of that sort happens to anybody. But again, we appreciate you listening. We'll have one more episode out before we go to ERX for the ERX Off-Road National, and that's it for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. He's Brent, I'm Shane, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.